Right, Thomas Byrne couldn't give clarity yesterday on RTE to a barrister on the referendum. I'll be voting no for sure, says a listener. We need to get back to speaking Irish, Irish independence from the EU, but there's plenty of countries that I'm not arguing whether we should be independent or not, but I don't see how the two are connected in that we have countries across Europe, members of the EU, very proud of their language. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were part of governments that bankrupted this country, believes this listener. Where is the moral obligation on them to return any of their payments? A question for some of you out there, maybe you can answer. Does the hospital in Letterkenny do MRIs? My mum went in by ambulance and they told her that she'd have to be referred by her GP to get an MRI. They can't do it in the hospital. She has to go through a fidia. We tried to go private then as she's in a lot of pain, but she still needs a GP referral. So what's the situation with MRIs at Letterkenny University Hospital? Please, someone out there knows, let us know. 08660 25000. Well, isn't that a perfect example of what could possibly happen if this new hate speech bill passes? If someone gets pushback or challenged on anything, then it's pulled out of the hat. Getting called hate speech will halt everything. We've seen it last year with the people speaking out against the migration policy of the government or trans community, etc. We need to stand up against the bill or all debate will be stifled. Now, I, as far as I can see, have seen very robust and very strongly worded at times debate about both migration and trans issues, transgenderism. So I don't see any debate being stifled at the moment. But if that's what you believe, the hate speech bill will introduce, that's perfectly fine. I understand exactly where you're coming from. The Children's Hospital is good value for money when you compare it to the $3.6 billion it's going to take to pay the latest pay increases for public sector workers. At least with the hospital, we're getting something in return. The problem with is capitalism. The higher you go up in the world, the more your profits go up. Hence Elon Musk earning millions daily, hence €450,000 paid out for a post supposed to be redundant yet still needed, and an ordinary RTE worker under-resourced and underpaid. This will never change. This will not change. It's worsening. Elon Musk is a remarkable character to me in that he stands for everything that in terms of the amount of money he has, the difference he could make in the world if he so wished. And he's actually held up as a man of the people because he's sort of anti-government and anti-mainstream media. And that's it, really. Other than that, he just wants money for off people so that people will see their comments and so on and so forth. And people adore him. They think he's amazing. But he's a multi-billionaire that's treated his staff very poorly in the past. And as I say, you know, just for people to have their free speech heard, he wants them to pay them. And people pay in their droves. And the same people that pay him the money are his greatest defenders. And yet these are also the people that claim they are the freest of speakers or free thinkers. It's remarkable what's going on. There'll be a book on it down the years and people will be amazed. It's cultish almost to some extent. Apart from anything in the changes to the referendum, shall strive to support such provision should frighten a lot of people to start with. Striving is only trying, not doing. As for a man, where is the equality in that? It's not the better person. Is it not the better person for the job, the listener asks. On the language, Gaelic is much more nuanced, ancient language, connected much more to the supernatural. Decolonise yourself. Make it part of your heart. Gaelgaboo, they say. Hi, Greg. Regarding Ivan Yates, it wasn't that he wouldn't countenance using Irish. It was the complete ignorant, near abusive and dismissive way in which he did so. It was barstool language by an ex-Fine Gael minister. But that's his thing again. Not defending him, but you book Ivan Yates. We booked him on this show. Well, which sounds booked him as if we paid him or something. He was plugging a book or plugging a podcast. You know he's going to say something controversial. You know, if you watch a panel of an evening on TV, they know who they're booking. They'll book a person to antagonise others and to get debate going. That's what when you book Ivan Yates, that's what you do. And there's others on the circuit as well. That's what you do. Whenever I was in Galway in the Gaeltacht, they thought that their Gaelga was superior to ours and that we only spoke Scotch Gaelga here in Donegal. What's the best way to get back to learning Irish? Well, we've covered that many, many times. We'll ask Barbara that question. In 10 years' time, there'll be hardly any English speakers in Letterkenny, never mind Irish, believes the listener. Irish was the national language until it was banned by the English. Irish should be the main language here. We had hedge schools, as we weren't allowed to speak Irish. People need to know this. But sometimes we are shy or embarrassed or careful in our language in talking about our history. Greg, I've read that one, and I read that one as well. So we're all up to date on those. Just before we go to a break, I want to play a couple of requests and mention something as well. Could you please wish Noel McLaughlin a happy retirement from Ayr after 43 years? Lots of love from his family. And I'd say Noel has seen some changes over the years in terms of technology and how we did things and how we used to do things. Enjoy your retirement. Well earned. A very happy 90th birthday to Bernadette Kennedy, who's in Duncan Ely. Hi, Bernadette. Love coming in from all of your neighbours and all of us here at Highland, of course. Please wish Hugo and Anne O'Donnell a very happy golden wedding anniversary. Lots of love from all the family. Please play this request. Well, they want it now, so we're just about now. A little bit later, but hopefully they're still with us in terms of listening. And I just want to mention a fundraiser that's coming up. Obviously, you'd be familiar with the lightning incident that devastated a number of homes and families in the Newton area. Well, there is a Newton Lightning Fund fundraising cycle, 40 kilometres or 20 kilometres. It's taking place on the 18th, that Sunday, isn't it? The starting point is Trinity Court, Newton, F93C6RK. 10 a.m. sign-in. 10 a.m. start, sign in 9:30. All proceeds raised on the day go to the Newtown Newton Lightning Fund. So if you like to get on the bike, you like to raise a bit of money, that's the event for you this Sunday, starting at Trinity Court, Newton. Registration or sign in from 9:30, 10 a.m. start. All proceeds go to a very worthy cause, that's the Newton Lightning Fund. How are you all doing this Friday? I hope you're very well. Looking forward to the weekend. Many of you, of course, will be working the weekend, and hope that all goes well for you as well. Julian Benson is founder of the Julian Benson Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. Julian, thanks for your time this morning.
Not at all, Greg. Lovely to be with you.
Can you talk to me a little bit about your foundation and why you established it?
So basically, many years ago, being in hospital for many years, I'd seen families, you know, sleeping on floors, sitting on chairs, having nowhere to stay and not being able to be with their loved ones when they're really, really sick. And I just vowed, if I ever got an opportunity in life, to have a platform to try and do something good and to put a home in place where families could stay, where they travel from all over Ireland. Like, they come from Donegal, Galway, Limerick. A place, it's a safe haven, Greg. A home where families can come free of charge, rest their head. We'll mind them while their loved ones are sick in hospital. Because the worst thing, Greg, is having seen over the years, imagine your brother, your son or your daughter, and nobody being able to be with them because they couldn't afford to travel or stay in Dublin. I've seen heartbreaking situations. Yeah. And when you're sick, Greg, all you want is somebody by your bedside. Mm-hmm. So we established the foundation to help those families in need. And I call them the unsung heroes, Greg, because sometimes families and carers are forgotten. And I want to look after those people.
And what this does too, you know, Julian, this will provide, when it's up and running fully, this will provide an invaluable service that won't be generally known, but it will mean so much to those that actually avail of it. You know, there are similar sort of initiatives and what have you, but when someone's sick, it's incredibly expensive. When you live in remote parts of the country, like we do here in Donegal, as you say, it's the practicalities of it are really, really difficult. This would make a very difficult time that bit more palatable.
Exactly, Greg. You know, and many families, this is the first of its kind for cystic fibrosis families. There's never been a home for them, a home away from home, as we call it, somewhere for them to stay. Yeah. And it's really going to make, this is a game changer, because as you said, it's so expensive to come to Dublin, to park, to stay, to find accommodation. But we're alleviating all the worries and stress for families. And, you know, it's going to make a difference to the family member and to the person who's sick in hospital. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're trying to do is fundraise. We have this big drive coming up now on February the 23rd. And this is our trades day. We're asking people, Greg, anybody, tilers, plumbers, you know, anybody who's got a trade who might be able to help us to come along and register, because this is all about community, Greg, and we can only do it with the help of others.
And it's so good that you're speaking to us, Julian. It's good you're speaking to us, because there is a huge amount of Donegal people who work and live and work in the construction industry during the week. Maybe they come home at the weekend. Sometimes they don't. You're calling on them, or if they're not listening, maybe their families, to reference this interview to them, to say, look, at if an awful, awful lot of people give up a little bit of their time and their skill set, you can get this over the line. The plan is there.
Exactly. And you know what, we're working, we've a wonderful team today. People are coming on board. We've Dermot Bannon with us. We're doing, he's doing the design. We've, you know, it's, there's a lot of companies with goodwill. But I have to say, there's so many wonderful people in Donegal. Just like you said, Donegal, I've a soft spot myself for Donegal, I have to say. I go to Downing's a lot. I love Donegal. And the people are good. And we have people with cystic fibrosis who travel from Donegal, you know, and we'd love the support of anyone, as you say, who might have a company or works for a company, who might just come on board this project and help us. And, you know, Greg, anything big or small, we would absolutely be very grateful for.
Okay, so just to be clear as to what we're talking about, there is this building. It's the charity's Tranquility House. It's a Georgian house, and it is to be transformed into four separate apartments so families of people getting treatment for cystic fibrosis can stay free of charge in Dublin, close to the hospital, while their loved one is receiving treatment. Now, there are 1,200 people living with cystic fibrosis in Ireland, and you would know, and because of stuff we've done on this show and elsewhere, that extended hospital stays are commonplace, and this can mean that they are either apart from their support network, their family, or it's incredibly expensive for the support network or family to be in close proximity to the patient. So you can see very clearly the significance of having four apartments in Dublin free of charge. What Julian is asking for is people who are traders, have an interest in renovating, people that can supply materials, stuff that, you know, can be low cost to the individual in terms of outlay. Obviously, really, a lot of this is about time as well. There's an open day taking place on Saturday the 23rd from 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. And is this, Julian, with a view to getting a crew together to get this project over the line so it can be open, up and running, and relieving pressure on these families and particularly the patients as we head towards the end of the summer?
Exactly. We're bringing everyone together on the 23rd. We will show them the plans. We will show exactly what we need, and that hopefully then everybody can be allocated, you know, what if there's a plumber, a tiler, etc. And then we're having a 10-day blitz in April where all the team we gather together are going to go to the house over 10 days and make this project come to life. Nice. So it's a big task, but we know we can do it. We know people are kind, and you know what? It's, you don't give up on these projects. It's for a good cause. It's for a legacy project for all cystic fibrosis community. It'll be owned by the community, and that's important. And it's just, it's going to make such a difference.
All right, we're talking about carpenters, plumbers, electricians, tilers, painters, sash window repair and restoration, garden landscapers, metal fabricators, interiors, bathroom and kitchens, and on it goes. If you have a skill, a trade, there will be work for you here, and lots of people can get this over the line really, really quite quickly. Is the best place to go for more information jbcff.com?
Exactly, jbcff.com. Go there. All the information is there. And if you don't have a trade or you can't make the day, you can absolutely donate. We need to keep running the house, the cost of running the house. So anything, we will whatever you can do for us, big or small, jbcff.com is where to go. And I would, and the team would be forever grateful.
All right, see you soon. Thanks, Julian. Julian Benson there, founder of the Julian Benson Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. If you need any further information on that, get in touch with us. We'll pass on that to you. Irish classes in Cara House in Letterkenny, apparently. Thanks very much, Eileen. Appreciate it. Kevin Collins is a regular YouTube watcher. Good to have you on board. Darren's regularly there as well, Darren. Thank you so much. Do you watch us on your telly, on your phone? How do you watch us, Darren? Beth, always good to see you with your comments, as it is with Teresa Dolores, too, another loyal listener. She says, yes, sure, it is lovely to hear our native language being spoken. I was in Sligo Hospital yesterday and met a family talking, and I spoke to, in Irish to them, as they say, some blasts. Audrey, good morning. And Charlie, often first in with the comments. Good morning. They're all watching across our social media, which you can do too. We're a radio station, of course, but hey, if you're at home or it suits you, you want to watch the show, feel free to do so. You can watch it back as well. How do you do that, I hear you ask? YouTube, on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, Highland Radio Ireland, and you can watch us there as you have a cup of coffee or do whatever your housework or whatever you're doing at home. We can go mobile with you on that app as well. And we're on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. Facebook used to do a thing on the smart TVs and Fire Sticks called Facebook Watch, but they got done away with that now. And it's funny, you could see our watchers sort of switch from Facebook over to YouTube because YouTube became more accessible. Now, coming up after 11, it's That's Entertainment. And I insist that you become involved in this item. We're going to be talking all things theatre, music. It could be, you maybe you want to talk about the Dingle's wedding. It doesn't matter. Any comments about anything. It's not aloof. There's no noses in the air. Whatever you want to talk about. Maybe you're watching Love Island, The Veterans, or whatever the bloody hell it's called. I never watched that show, so there's no point me watching the All-Stars. Anything at all that you're watching, find entertaining. Any little funny stories about watching TV. Any awkward moments watching TV with family. Anything like that at all. Any funny cinema experiences or at the stage. Whatever it might be. Just get involved. Whatever's in your head, put it in the text and send it in to us, because it's good fun, it's good crack. And I'll tell you what it does is... We have a mix of stuff on the show, obviously. We have the very serious, but we actually do, and we don't have a reputation for it. We actually do have quite a bit of fun on this show as well, as I hope regular listeners would know. And then we ease our way into the weekend by, for the last hour of the show, we switch off from the serious stuff in life a little bit and focus on anything that you want to talk about. And we also use it an opportunity as well to sort of promote and plug artists or events. We have live music coming up between 11 and 12, a live performance as well. Okay, so give it a chance if you don't normally listen between 11 and 12. And that's coming up in about 27 minutes. Now, the last elections, I think it was the last elections, or it may well have been the elections before that, there was a situation whereby there was one area where people voted in a town that was upstairs with no lift. I couldn't understand at the time how that could be, that no one thought, right, if someone has, you know, reduced mobility or is in a wheelchair, how are they going to actually be able to exercise their democratic right to vote? And we did speak to someone at the time who was unable to do so, and of course felt disempowered by it on many levels, not least not being able to be involved in the democratic process. Well, let's make sure we don't make those mistakes again. I hear Joan Carthy, National Advocacy Manager at the Irish Wheelchair Association, say, I mean, in this day and age, it's hard to believe, isn't it, Joan, that associations like the IWA have to be calling for barriers to vote for people with a disability to be removed. But we are here. We still have an awful lot of work to do, don't we?
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me on. Yeah, absolutely. We still have so far to go. The numbers of inaccessible polling stations is reducing, but we shouldn't even be having this conversation in 2024. It's not like as if it's a new thing. This has been going on for years. People with disabilities have the right to vote alongside everybody else, and still we're having the conversations around whether somewhere is accessible or not. We're down to 29 buildings that are inaccessible, but they're 29 buildings that hold, each one of them hold quite a few polling booths. So while the number seems low, when you take into account the amount of polling stations within those buildings, it's still significantly high.
I can't imagine what kind of a message it sends or how it must feel to, and you know, it's not just wheelchair users as well. There's lots and lots of people that aren't in wheelchairs but that might have mobility issues. I can't imagine how dehumanizing, and I hope I'm not exaggerating there, it must feel to sort of get a lift or get in your car, get yourself to a polling station and the building's not accessible to you. It must feel horrendous.
It does. And for people with disabilities, and I'm a wheelchair user myself, and I face this kind of these kind of barriers on a daily basis, that you arrive somewhere and it's not accessible, or you've been told it's accessible, but really it's not. So just kind of putting down a ramp at a front door does not necessarily make a building accessible, nor does it actually make the experience of voting accessible. And we're not only talking about wheelchair users and people with mobility issues taking part in the process. We're talking about people who have an intellectual disability, maybe visually impaired, all of those other things that come into account when you're actually trying to vote and vote privately are all an issue.
And if you can get into the building, and in reality, you know, for the majority of buildings are accessible, are there further challenges when you get in, you know, in terms of the privacy for voting, the polling booths and what have you? Are they broadly friendly?
In many cases, no. The table height, as you'd be well aware yourself, is usually for somebody who's standing up. So if you're a wheelchair user, or even very small of stature, all of these things become an issue in relation to trying to vote privately. We would also have people who have an intellectual disability, and the information for them is not in an easy read format. So that in itself becomes a difficulty. Even before they go to vote, that the information about the candidates is not in an accessible format for those people. So there's lots of things. I suppose the voting process, it's a very ad hoc situation for people with disabilities.
Are there any challenges for the visually impaired? Like what might need to be done to assist them? Now, I know you're speaking on behalf of the Irish Wheelchair Association, but you're across all of these issues. I mean, are there challenges there for someone whose sight might not be 20/20 to be able to partake in the process?
Yeah, there is. And there is a lot of work that's after being done in relation to providing the information in Braille on the day. But specifically for local elections and the European elections run side by side, it means that the ballot paper is extremely unfriendly, I suppose, in general for anybody. But then when you're trying to put that into a space where people are using Braille on it, it's the length of the ballot paper itself and the lack of kind of flexibility in the material that has to be used. So for that, and somebody trying to do that in private becomes very difficult. So that's still a very big challenge for people with a visual impairment.
Yeah, too. And I think as well as that, before we get to the vote, candidates need to be aware too of the technology that people use in an online space. And I'm thinking particularly of the visually impaired, in terms of, you know, you will see sometimes pictures with words on that readers can't necessarily pick up, and other ways in which they spread their information. Just to think and say, right, is this broadly accessible? You know, will someone I'm trying to get to vote for me just their technology just read an image and not the text? You know what I mean? Sort of kind of describe it, but not the words. You know what I mean? It's very important, yeah. I think, too, before we get to the actual vote itself, too, that candidates are aware that their literature and what have you needs to be, I think, broadly consumable.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. And what needs to be remembered is 22% of the population have a disability. That's a huge voting number, and you really need to be reaching them and making sure that they have the information if you want to be able to get the vote. People with disabilities, we have as much right as anybody else, and we have a lot of needs the same way as everybody else does. So our vote is really, really important.
Can I just, in relation to the importance of that vote, because you talked about a large chunk of the population, and turnout at these elections can be really quite low. it's very important too that people motivate themselves where they can to get out and vote and try and demand change, because there are many, many boxes that are decided by one or two or three votes. Do you know what I mean? I think it's important that, yes, of course, people have the ability to vote, but also that they have their voice heard as well, particularly in this country whereby, you know, I don't think often maybe enough policy and conversation is had in political circles about people with disabilities. I mean, we've seen just this week, and we're going to cover it again next week, whereby the way in which set teachers are allocated is changing, that a box that was there once to tick if someone had a disability or additional needs, that has been removed. So in some ways, right, which means a third of set schools will lose set hours, in some ways we're going backwards, right? So I think it's really important when these issues affect you or you care about them, that you get out and try and affect the change.
100%. And that topic that you've just brought up, I suppose, is another topic that I'd love to have a conversation with you about.
Well, I'll tell you. I think you've made your point very clearly in relation to voting. Talk to me about that issue then, whilst you're there, if you have a view on that and there's something that you want to say. I'm not going to rush you along, Joan.
Yeah, well, I suppose with the standardisation in relation to the needs of children across the board is going to become a huge problem. And even with the exams that they do in primary school to, you know, that kind of checks on what their ability is really not a very good tester of people's capabilities. But also what it's going to do is it's standardizing everything that is put into the school. And that doesn't work because we have children on either end of the scale. We have children who need support to bring them up to a level. But we also have children who are exceptionally able within our classes that aren't getting any sort of intellectual support. And that's a huge problem in itself. And if we standardise these, a lot of these kids who are on the other end who have exceptional, if they don't have the right stimulation, they don't usually score very well in these standardised testings. And even if they do, it'll actually be seen as being, well, they don't have any problems, they don't have any needs. So you're actually ruling out a lot of children on both sides. Mm-hmm. I feel with the standardising piece. But there's a lot of stuff that's going on kind of in the background with different pieces of legislation that are being reviewed. There's guidelines out there. There's no real training and education for the teachers in relation to exceptionally able. But I know we're kind of going down a different...
Yeah, but the point is... There, yeah, but I get you, but these changes, right? These changes, it seems to be those that are best informed in this, which is often and always actually is the teachers, the parents, the guardians, that this is a way of not really truly investing in a fully inclusive education system, that it is it is actually going backwards in that regard. Again, I'm struggling to see any logic to this change that's taking place. I think at the very least, it means that a lot of these children aren't even seen or recognised. It means that schools are put into an awkward situation in allocating SET hours. You know, so there are those that maybe in most need might get the hours, but that means many children of parents that are listening to this show won't get the hours they ordinarily would have got. And if this is allowed to happen, it will very quickly become the norm. And to get this reversed would be very, very difficult. There is a window, would you agree, Joan? There is a window that everyone needs to have their say on this and say, no, we can't go backwards in this regard. It's been admitted in the Dáil, a third of schools will see a reduction in their SET hours. That affects an awful lot of students in this country.
Yeah, and it's incredible that we're just gambling with our children's future. And that's exactly what's happening for children on both ends of the scales. That's exactly what's happening. We're gambling with their future. There is a window. And I think everybody has to have a voice in this. I think it's hugely important that the teachers themselves and the unions, even behind them, are coming out very strongly that they're on radio stations like this. They're saying that's what's happening is wrong. It just seems to be a very kind of silent piece. That
I'd love to know where the National Parents Council is as well. The last time I heard from them, it was about masks or something or other. Well, what is the National Parents Council actually? I'm not asking you to weigh in on it unless you want to, Joan, but what is the it was masks and there was something else that they came in on. I can't remember, but not a word from them. Have I heard a word from them yet? I don't know what that organization is, but whatever it is, it gives the impression that parents are okay with this. I think the National Parents Council should be joining with others and screaming from the rooftops about this, but I have not heard a dicky bird from them.
Yeah, and we would be with you on that. We would find that it's, like I already said, it's a very silent thing that's happening. It seems to be slipping in and there's nobody shouting about it. There are some parents groups that are advocates, and I know obviously from both sides, with people who have an intellectual disability and have special needs on that level, and then people who have children who are exceptionally able and have needs on that end. Both are going to struggle big time through this.
All right, Joan, listen, thanks for all your time. And I appreciate that you also were able to comment on the second issue. I really do thank you very much indeed for that. Take care of yourself. And just in terms of inclusivity, we often talk about the streaming of the programme for people to watch if it suits them. The reason that was actually initially introduced, the reason why I wanted to do this and was so keen to do it as well, was that there are lots of people who have hearing issues that can't listen to the radio, but they can watch the programme, and both YouTube and Facebook do subtitles. It's not perfect at times, but I do know we do have a lot of people, because they contact me and I speak to them, that actually are able now to keep up with the current affairs or what's happening or the crack in their community, because they can read the text, the subtitles that appears across the screen here. So that's very rewarding, and actually the motivation for why I started streaming the show in the first place. But it's grown into something else as well in addition to that. Okay, back with more shortly. So yesterday we're inviting you to tell us about your family debates, because me and Lee Gooch, my sunshine, were arguing about whether something or not was a crowbar. And then that debate raged online as well. So we were asking you what your family debates were. And one, a big fight in the house at the moment, is I think Rona has the right to her baby on Emmerdale. Others say no, the father has ownership now. I think this is a storyline in Emmerdale whereby, was she a surrogate mother, Rona? Or did you put the child up for adoption? I'm not really quite sure. I missed that part. But anyway, she took the child and went away, and then the father was led to her, and she's facing investigation now. Others say no, the father has ownership. I'm not really quite sure, and the storyline hasn't played out. But I was sort of watching the soaps over the phone, and is it funny the way women are portrayed in the soaps as sort of scatty or hysterical or jelly or whatever. I don't know, I just feel sometimes you watch the soaps and, you know, there's one scene where a woman went in a panic to breastfeed in the pub or something. And I was like, well, what do I do? And all this kind of stuff. And I just thought, if I was a woman, I'd be going like, seriously? You know, we are more capable than that. But that being said, maybe that's reflective of some out there in society today. So as I say, during the entertainment, it's not anything to do with the soaps. More than happy to talk about that as well. You can keep your family feuds coming. Anything that you want to talk about. Right. A couple of comments as we head towards the news at 11. How dare the government invite all those workers back to Ireland? Sure, look what happened. The nurses, they all came home during COVID. They were left high and dry. Why should our sons and daughters come back here when the government chased them out of their own country? Hi, Greg. Not a doctor related, but dentist related. I'm in Inishowen and can't get a dentist for my teenagers with medical cards in Inishowen or Letterkenny. You see that. They are often grouped in doctors and dentists, but the dentists are private practices. And we've heard from dentists in the past that say they have to keep a balance between public and private to actually make their business make money. That being said, if you are prepared to travel a little, I'm not sure if it's the case now, but there certainly was a dentist down in the Donegal town area which was taking on new patients. Letterkenny, there's so many of you up here. And you know, little resources. The resources are there, but they're being overstretched. And last one, just before we take a break. Hi, Greg. Canada, Australia and New Zealand have now called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. Ireland refuses to call for a Gaza humanitarian ceasefire. As in all matters Irish, simply follow the money trail, which leads directly to the international illegal Jewish settlements in the West Bank by Ireland. Shame, 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 says Raymond there. Thank you very much for that, Raymond. Okay. Rightio. Let us take that break. Stay right where you are. It is the 9 till noon show here in Highland. Michael and Fionnuala are going to be joining us in studio in just a few moments.